Classic. Our comedy prime minister at his best. Blair is dead in the water, chaps. No such luck. Oh, I've just remembered we're all going to die. And not only that, not only are we all going to die, but it seems that the whole of humanity might die. The whole of civilization might die out, and we may well be one of the last few generations of humanity. Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, today I would like to talk about the possibility that we might just die out as a species, or certainly civilization might die out for 10,000 years, and we may well be one of the last generations of humanity, and certainly one of the last generations of civilization. Now, why is this the case? Well, let me explain. We have recently seen in Africa the re-emergence of Marburg virus. Marburg virus is not very nice. According to the World Health Organization, it has a mortality rate of, well, some people estimate 30%, but some people estimate as high as 88%. If you get it, it's a nausea, vomiting, chest pain, sore throat, abdominal pain, diarrhea, the symptoms are increasingly awful, you go into shock, you get jaundice, inflammation of the pancreas, severe weight loss, delirium, liver failure, massive hemorrhaging, multi-organ dysfunction, and eventually you bleed to death, to some extent, out of your arse. It's really not a very nice way to go. And as I say, mortality rate of up to 88%, and nothing really that we can do about it. No vaccine, nothing like that. Now, Ebola, you also have that. That's pretty awful in Africa. Yellow fever, Lassa, all of these, about a 10% mortality rate, but they do have vaccines. Marburg virus, really not very nice, as if not more lethal than the Black Death, and no vaccine. Now, it's not amazingly contagious. You get it through sort of blood-to-blood contact, things like that. But the problem with this is that these kinds of viruses evolve to become contagious. And we know that this has happened with a certain virus that is very popular at the moment. They start off not being particularly contagious and they evolve to become more contagious. They adapt and eventually they become airborne. So if we change our behaviour, if we start wearing the old masks and things like this, then of course they change their behaviour. They evolve such that the more successful components of the virus can survive in smaller and smaller and smaller droplets, and eventually they can survive in droplets that are so small that they can survive essentially in the air, in aerosol. Now, when that happens, they are airborne and they simply hang around in the air, and then that's it. Then you've got a serious problem on your hands. Now, this could happen with other viruses that are far more deadly than the virus that is pretty popular at the moment. For example, it hasn't happened with rabies. There's no vaccine for rabies. It could happen with rabies. Imagine that. Imagine if you had rabies hanging around in the air. Rabies has a mortality rate of 90% and you die in agony and it sends you mad. It could happen with anthrax. Anthrax has a mortality rate of 80%. Admittedly, there is a vaccine for anthrax. And it could happen with various other Andes disease, mortality rate of 37%. Could happen. How could it happen? Well, zoonotic pathogens are extremely common. That is to say that you're in contact with animals and the conditions jump from animals to humans, they get into humans, and they start evolving, and they start becoming worse and worse and worse, and more and more and more severe, until in extremis, they become airborne, people can cough them out, that sort of thing, and then you're in serious trouble. How do they come about? Well, they come about, first of all, through being close to animals. Once you have an agricultural society, you are close to animals, and therefore these conditions can jump the species barrier. The second thing that causes them is population density. Once you have population density, cities, things like that, you have humans being close to one another, and therefore you have these conditions spreading to other people. The third thing that you have is basically an international society. That's what you get at a time of high societal development, during, as it were, the autumn or early winter of civilization. You have a highly international society that's highly highly networked with trade links and things like that, so that these conditions can move around and be spread to very large numbers of people. Now, basically what you have then is an enormous laboratory in which these conditions can evolve and in which these conditions can become worse and worse and worse and more and more and more severe. You have basically an R strategy. R strategy, of course, is an easy, an element of R strategy is an easy ecology. This is an easy ecology for pathogens to some extent. And because it is an easy ecology for pathogens, they can then grow like anything. They can then spread like anything. They can then increase like anything. You have this, these ecologies become vectors of disease. Now, when do we see in history these vector of disease conditions? We see them, and we have seen them before, just before or around during the time of the collapse of civilizations. I don't need to tell you, if you've been drinking at the Jolly Heretic for quite a long time, that of course civilizations go through cycles. They start off under harsh conditions. This selects strongly for intelligence and cooperativeness and things like this. This then creates the civilization. This then creates the civilization then reduces the harshness of the conditions because it brings in things like, as you saw with Rome and Greece, like plumbing and health. Healthcare and all that sort of thing. It reduces, there's no less war, it reduces mortality salience. That means you have a rise in mutational load, a rise in basically genetically sick people, more and more people, larger and larger numbers of people, and eventually, for various reasons, people that are more intelligent stop wanting to have children. It's unclear why. One reason could be that they're more environmentally sensitive. It's an evolutionary mismatch. This kind of makes them weird and a bit depressed and they don't want children. Another reason is that you have the rise of contraception and more intelligent people are better able to use it, and they want to have they're wealthy and they think of the future more, so they end up with lower numbers of children. Intelligence starts to go down. So intelligence is going down, genetic health is going down, population density is very, very, very high. There's a complex society with international trade links. This is the perfect time for you to develop a deadly disease. And this is exactly what happened last time. This is what explains, in part, I mean, it was already in decline, but with the collapse of classical civilization, you had the rise of bubonic plague. You had a civilization, a huge, huge civilization of people that were decreasingly genetically healthy and were increasingly stupid and making impulsive decisions. And in that context, in the 500s of the great Justinian, you have it gets a bit colder. Now, this is a serious problem, of course, because it gets a bit colder. That means the population is too large for the amount of food that can be produced. So the people are already ill. They're already unwell because they're starved. They're not having enough food. They're not well. And then this means that the plague then develops. It develops into a form where it spreads via fleas and whatever. Because it's cold, the fleas can't pass out the plague bacillus from their system because it's too hard. So they kind of bite it into the human. The human gets plague. Then it changes such that it can become pneumonic plague, such that it is airborne, such that it can be spat from human to human. And then you get this massive outbreak of plague for the first time ever that we know of. 60% mortality rate. What's the result of the 60% mortality rate? Collapse of civilization, degeneration into war and famine, and huge levels of migration, people moving around to try and find land, retreat from the cities, going back to the farms to try and get food, going back to hunting and whatever, people moving around, coming into contact, spreads the plague more. More mortality, then you get warfare and whatever, people coming into contact, more mortality, then you get the collapse of the cities because they can't be sustained anymore because people are running, no longer have the money to, you know, need these extra things and whatever. So all these people die because they can't get food because their jobs don't get them food anymore. Yet more mortality, people move away from the cities back to the land, the cities collapse into ruin and grass grows over them and so on. And yet fighting for land, more mortality. And so you end up with a death rate of 60%. Now, how is this relating to us? Well, we have exactly the same conditions, but in a much more extreme way that existed in the 530s, 540s, during the Great Justinian Plague, in which 60% of Europe was wiped out. Exactly the same conditions, but in a much more extreme way. They had the Mediterranean and Northern Europe as one interconnected society. We have the entire world. They had a society which reduced mortality salience to some extent and therefore was a bit high in mutational load. We have mortality rate, a child mortality having fallen from 50% to less than 1%. Which implies that 90% of us, not sort of 90% of us, wouldn't survive if harsh Darwinian conditions were reimposed. So we have a huge level of mutational load. So we are a very genetically sick people, far more so than they are. So we have the conditions that they have, but far worse. The conditions for a massive plague to happen, but far worse. And these plagues will happen from bats or whatever. These things do come about eventually. They will happen eventually. It's in nature that they happen eventually. So that being so, why aren't we all dead? Well, one reason is because the WHO does all that it can. Of course, it worries us and creates, you know, panic and whatever to try and stop these outbreaks. The second reason is that we have vaccines against lots and lots of things. And the third reason is that we have antibiotics. So how is our current situation going to balls this up? Well, first of all, IQ is declining. As we know, as I've looked at in other videos, there's a correlation of minus 0.2 between intelligence and how many children you have. The only element of society that has above replacement fertility are those that have an IQ of about 80 in Western countries. IQ is collapsing and should be down, if it's 100 now, to about 85 by the end of the century. Now, what that is going to mean is no new vaccines. Not intelligent enough to create a new vaccine eventually when a new major disease comes along. No vaccine. That's going to mean mass death. And indeed, as intelligence declines, the structure and organisation of society messes up because that's associated with intelligence. So the ability to administer the vaccine, even if you do come up with it, is messed around with. So that's going to mean mass death. The second problem is declining trust. This is a correlate of low intelligence, that you're low in trust. Declining trust will mean, as we see, people refusing to take the vaccine. People thinking that, it's the government trying to control them. Which, I mean, I'm not saying they have reason to think that. But the point is that they do think that. And so they're less likely to take the vaccine. And so, therefore, more death. The third problem is declining genetic health. That means more people getting the illness and the vaccine, it's just not good enough. Or they die before they can get it. Or whatever. Which contributes to the mass death. Downriver of the declining genetic health, if people have declining genetic health and are more stupid, then they will have declining just general health. They'll make unhealthy life decisions. They'll be overweight, or they'll do unhealthy things, or they'll have sexually transmitted diseases that will compromise their immunity and whatever, which will contribute further to them dying. And then finally, you have, of course, a crisis of antibiotics, which is that these conditions will become gradually immune to antibiotics, and therefore you die of them. So what this would mean then, if this collapse happened, and I think it's almost inevitable that it will, the Malthusian cycle, and why would we be any different from the Malthusian cycle, tells you that in any species it's the same. Population grows, population becomes too large, population's massive, everything's good, therefore genetic diversity is large, therefore the level of mutation is substantial, and eventually something changes. The nature of the environment changes, or the population just becomes too large for the amount of available food or whatever, and what you get then is a mass collapse, and the population survives because it always goes through these cycles, but it hovers around a natural level. That is true of all animals, and there is no reason why it wouldn't be true of us. What the Industrial Revolution has done is it has simply allowed this Malthusian cycle, which we've always seen, of rises and falls in population throughout our history, to be sustained so that we can rise much further, because we have created an Industrial Revolution which has meant that the pace of production, of food basically, of the ability to has outpaced population growth because of all these innovations. And so therefore we've created this incredibly easy environment for humans, the easiest environment ever. But eventually, because that is underpinned by our intelligence, and because our intelligence goes into decline, and secondly, because of the other factors that this causes, such as very high population density and whatever, eventually we won't be able to sustain that environment, plus we'll be very, very genetically sick, plus there'll be the very high possibility of major disease outbreaks. So this will break down. But the problem is that because we've gone so high, we can go very, very low. We will be so genetically sick when the breakdown occurs that the collapse will be absolutely enormous, in which such a high percentage of the population just falls apart. Such a high percentage of the population are not evolved to deal with basically what in evolutionary terms is real life. All the skills that would permit them to survive when the collapse happens, such as to farm, to shoot, to guard, to do gardening, all these skills, once the society becomes dead, are lost. As was seen in the North Korean famine, people like lawyers and doctors and whatever, they were the first to die. They had nothing to offer. They died. So what we would see is something like this. You would see, you would see not just everything I've already said, but every disease at once attacking us. Measles, everything would come back. Whooping cough, absolutely everything would come back. Plus, in the context of war, you might well get a nuclear meltdown because we have nuclear weapons, or a nuclear war. And so what this could mean is that humanity collapses down to numbers that are so low that we can't recover, or at least we can't recover civilization. So there's very, very low numbers of Western people. The people that won't be affected by this are going to be those that are not connected to the system, to the broad civilizational system. Hunter gatherers living in the Amazonian rainforest, hunter gatherers living in Borneo, people like that. They're not going to be affected. They're probably not. Why would they be affected by it? They won't be. So they'll be all right. So if that were the case, we'd be back to primitive people and a dark age potentially lasting for thousands and thousands of years. There are so-called pseudoscientists who aver that this happened before. They say, Graham Hancock, people like this, that they suggest that this has happened before, that the Sphinx was in fact built about 7,000 years ago, or 8,000 years ago, and that it was the product of a high civilization that existed back then, and that that civilization absolutely collapsed. Something appalling happened. It absolutely, totally collapsed. It is suggested that in many mythologies, this is preserved, the memory of this civilization, as, for example, the Watchers in the Bible, this race of giants that existed on Earth when Adam and Eve were thrown out of the Garden of Eden. Why were they seen as giants? They were assumed to be giants, and they had sex with men, with humans, with mankind, because they could build these amazing things. And these extremely primitive hunter-gatherers, or whatever they were, or pastoralists, assumed that they must have been giants to be able to build these things. And what is suggested is that what happened is that you had this tiny remnant of civilization that realised it was all dying out, and went around to these hunter-gatherers trying to tell them about, you know, civilization and so forth in an attempt to preserve it. These hunter-gatherers, because they were so amazing, regarded the Watchers and people like this as godlike and worshipped them as gods. This is euhemerism. So that they Zeus and people like this were actual people who they perceived to be gods and were remembered as gods, and these giant gods who built these things like the Sphinx and so on. That is, I don't say that's necessarily correct. I think it's highly speculative, but it's certainly a very interesting idea. And that's what we might be left to do as a people. You'd have this tiny remnant of civilization that was left and went around desperately trying to tell hunter-gatherers about things. Interesting idea. But it is certainly possible that humanity could die out as a consequence of flying so high. We are like Icarus, and we have flown too close to the sun, and we may well go extinct as a result. Well, I hope this has been of interest, and if it has, then please do subscribe. It helps most violently if you do that. You can also subscribe over on BitChute and Odyssey, and remember to help the channel. If you want to do that, you can do it below. I live stream Monday and Thursday at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. If you want to send in questions, you can do so. I will research them and answer them, and I will see you soon, and goodbye!